Welcome to A More Beautiful Life Collective. We know that in the hectic hurry of everyday life, it's easy to lose sight of what really matters. This is a moment to pause and realign your focus on the one who gives us peace and rest. We are focusing on discipleship, productivity, and homemaking as we live with eternity in mind. This is the place where you'll learn to create a life you love and cultivate your heart for God. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Season 1, Episode 6 of A More Beautiful Life Collective podcast. Recently, we've been discussing habits, and as September comes to a close, we're turning our focus to homes, families, and our households. In today's episode, we're going to be thinking about our vision for home, but bear with me, even if you're a guy or if you're someone that you live by yourself, we need to understand this. Home is a central part of our lives. In fact, it's one of the commandments that was given to humans, both men and women, at the dawn of time. We were to go into the world and create a home out of it. So today we're going to discuss what that means, what it means to make a home, and why it's so important. And then we're going to be thinking about some practical applications that come from having the correct theology of home. So don't forget that you can subscribe whenever you get... Don't forget that you can subscribe wherever you get your podcast so that you never miss an episode. If you haven't yet, would you consider leaving a 5-star rating and review for the podcast? This helps new listeners find the show. You can also visit my blog. The link's in the show notes for additional posts and episodes. You can leave a comment on today's episode if you have any thoughts, and I'll respond to it in the next episode to keep the conversation going. Now, on to the episode. In the beginning was a garden, lush and vibrant. There was abundance and life. There was a father and his children, connection, intimacy, a family, a home. Eden was the perfect picture of home. It was a place of belonging, a place of kindness, beauty, and the gentle calm of a life well lived. With the fall, the dreams of a home made beautiful were dashed. I was recently reading about home, and one of the things that they mentioned was that the second law of thermodynamics states that our world is always moving towards disorder and decay. We have talked about this before as we thought about our habits, that the world is moving to chaos and decay. And so sin has literally forced not just ourselves, but our whole world into a system that's bent on spiraling out of control. As we've been discussing habits, I think it's crucial to understand that our habits don't occur in a vacuum. We're not individuals that are solely concerned with ourselves. I think modernity has caused us to think that we can operate alone and still function. But we can't. The lie of individualism is exactly what I said. It's a lie. So as we think about habits, routines, and rhythms that we desire, we have to understand that it's not just focused on the personal habits and disciplines that we feel that we need to help us achieve our goals. We also have to be concerned with the habits that help strengthen the fabric of our families and communities. We have to be concerned with our households. We must be people who make a home. We are all homemakers. One of my earliest memories involves the magic of Christmas time. So every year we had a host of traditions. We did lots of things with my church and with my family. But one of the things that I loved that would always create a sense of wonder and excitement for me and my brothers was waking up on the morning of Christmas. And we would be wearing our special Christmas pajamas. But instead of, you know, what they do in movies, or maybe this is what you do in your household, instead of quickly racing down the stairs, we had to wait up in our rooms until our parents got up and set up the presents. So what they would do is they would say, "You can't wake us up. If you wake, or your presents will turn into a lump of coal." Instead, they would wake up, they would make their coffee, they would, you know, start breakfast, and then they would set out each of our stockings and gifts in a special place that they had prepared for us in the living room. After turning on the twinkling lights on the tree, they would give us the okay to come down the stairs, and they would set up everything for us. They prepared a place for us to create this beauty and this excitement for us. You know, thinking about that, I wonder if God felt the same way. When he set to work on the first day of creation, with powerful words, he spoke the world into being. With broad brushstrokes of light, of color, of warmth, of vibrancy, he made everything perfect. It was a place prepared for a people that he loved. As he welcomed Adam into the world, I wonder if Adam displayed the same wonder-filled awe that I did as I walked down the stairs on Christmas morning. It was a beautiful and special place, a home created by a father who loved him. In an episode of the Daily Grace Co. podcast, Jen Pollock Michelle, which I've talked about her on the blog a couple times, she wrote a book in good time, but before she wrote that book, she wrote a book on home and the meaning of home called A Keeping Place. But in this podcast episode, she talks about the meaning of home. And I think in culture, well, I know this from the people that I talk to, we think of homemaking as something that's domestic. So it's the job description of maybe a house cleaner and a cook for your daily meals. It normally involves grocery shopping, a meal planning, laundry, cleaning schedules, home management, watching the kids. All of those things come to mind. It would be, you know, that's like the description of homemaking 101 if you ask the world. An old-fashioned homemaker in pearls and a dress calling in Beaver Cleaver to dinner from playing outside. However, what Jean says is that really, God is the first homemaker. The description given in Genesis is one of God preparing a home or a habitation for his people that is safe, abundant, and life-giving. I think a homemaker is someone who makes a place of belonging for others. They participate in the same process that God did in the beginning, where they create this order out of chaos. And in doing so, they attempt to make a place where everyone they love can live fruitfully and abundantly. In fact, one of the commandments given was this. So I'll read it to you. It's from Genesis 1:28. It says, God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Sally Clarkson says in her book, Desperate, I'll read to you what she says. She said, this concept of subduing an area doesn't mean to rule over it in such a way as to tame it, but in actual context of the world means to exert your influence over something in such a way that it becomes subjected to your leadership and it becomes productive and fruitful. The command given to all humanity is to rule over the place where we are and turn that place into our own garden, to go and form our own Eden out of the chaos. This is what a homemaker does. I think sometimes we can look at that verse, and instead of thinking about making something beautiful out of the chaos that's fruitful, we think of how we can subjugate a people or a place for our own benefit. I think a lot of times we look at that verse, and sometimes we think of exploitation, where you know, you're going, and maybe you could think of this with gardening or farming, where you are turning a place, and because you're exerting your human influence over that thing, you're destroying the place in the process. This happens with gardens sometimes. If you don't give gardens rest, you can suck the nutrients out of all the gardens, and the gardens becomes a desert. It's not fruitful anymore. But really, the command in Genesis is the exact opposite of that. It's not use the land so much that you destroy it. Instead, it's take a land and subdue it and turn it into something beautiful. We recently visited a miniature golf course that's close to our house. And the man who bought the course created this piece of land out in the middle of nowhere. Think of, you know, backwoods, rural south, in the middle of these fields. He created it and he built this place that was an oasis. It was this place that was full of a flourishing garden. And I think that is something that is a picture of what we're supposed to do with our homes. What he did was, you know, he had to clear the land, and then he had these huge, strange cave-like concrete arches for the miniature golf course. And if you look at that, you might have thought, okay, that's like a barren wasteland. Like, what's going on? But in addition to that, he planted trees and shrubs and flowers, and he turned it into a flourishing garden. It's a picture of subduing something in order to cultivate something that allows for growth. And this is what we need to do as we think about home. Our homes are the places where we're loved for, we're cared for, we're allowed to be who we truly are, we are seen and provided for. We can fill up ourselves at home, and we also, using our homes, we pour out for others. A homemaker is a person who creates this place for our households. It is the one who creates this place for the ones that we love. As we think about this, I think it's important to caution ourselves that home is not just limited to caring for our immediate family or any kind of notion of the American nuclear family of the 50s. Instead, it is something that's so much more inclusive and expansive. In The Spiritually Vibrant Home by Don Everts, he describes who your household is. And what he says is basically your household, it does include, obviously, anyone who lives under your roof, so your spouse, your kids, but it also includes, in addition to that, anyone who might be a friend, extended family member, or part of your church community that feels like family. So we can always remember, you know, those friends from high school that could walk into your home and it just seems like they were one of the family. Or maybe you went over someplace and your friend's house was a place where you felt like you were just one of the family. I had a friend growing up that we would go to the grocery store and we would specifically buy her certain groceries. We'd always buy cheese sticks and we would buy her those groceries and she knew exactly where they were. So anytime she would come over, she would go to the fridge, she would help herself, and she knew that we were going to have those things. She was one of the family where she knew where stuff was and she knew that she was always invited. And I think in our modern individualistic world, it can seem like that kind of relationship would be an overstep, that she would be entering into my space without respecting the fact that she was in my home and it was my family's things and not hers, that some kind of boundary was crossed. But I think what we find in scripture is the exact opposite idea of that. It's not that you have your own space that is sacred and it's just yours. Instead, we're commanded to break down these barriers of an isolationist culture. We're supposed to invite people into our homes and say, wholeheartedly believing it, what is mine is truly yours. In the Bible, when households are talked about, it's never just the immediate blood-related family. Like, obviously includes that, but it's so much more than that. Abraham's household was close to 300 men. He literally had an entire army at his command. In the New Testament, there were several instances of the household, and it would include the servants and other workers in the household. And I think we need to expand our modern definition of family and household to mimic that of a biblical understanding. Now, with this, we have to understand, you know, that who that is. And so I think we need to make a list in our minds. I think if we do this, it helps us to understand what the church is supposed to be. So before we move on, what I'd like for you to do is just think with me for a second, or you can grab a pen, you can write this down, you could pause it and come back to it. But I want you to think about this. First, who is your immediate family? So go ahead and take a minute and write down what their names are. And then once you've written that down, I want you to write down the names of anybody who lives under your roof but may not be close family. And then write down the names of all the families that may not live under your roof, but they come over to your house quite a bit or you go to theirs. They really do feel like family. And then in addition to that, I want you to think about friends and coworkers and church family that maybe visit you regularly, or, you know, you may not be inviting them into your home, but these are the people that feel like family because you work with them, you see them all the time, so they feel like family. And if you have thought about all these people that, you know, have came to mind, all these people that are connected to you that feel like family, this is your household. This expanded list is who you are creating a home for. So obviously, it includes so much more than just you and your kids. And in addition to this, I think something that's really cool to do is to consider now whose list you'd be on. Who do you feel like considers you family? And then going on, and you're going to see this picture that it creates. Now think about the people that the person that you would be on their list, think about the other names that would be on their list, and you can start to see how it creates this web of people. And honestly, I think this is what the church is. This is how the church is formed. You know, we always talk about how the church is not a building. Well, the church is built up of households. I think families are the building blocks of who the church is, and we are all interconnected households that hold fast to the truth of the gospel. We encourage one another and we lift each other up to serve one another and God with everything that we are. So as you picture this, you could see how by this interconnected households, we're linking up. And if we're all connected and we're all living for God, you could see how that would have a ripple effect in the community, where because of the influence that you have on these other people, what you are doing is impacting other people that you may not even know, but it's because you're connected to them through a family friend. So as you imagine this, I want you to consider what kind of home you are making for your households. And again, like I said, our households are so much more than just our kids. We are, in future episodes, we're going to talk about practices and habits and things that you can do for your kids. But I think it's important to expand our definition of households, because I think that this matters for so many more people than just the people who have young kids or just the people who are considering how they can be homemakers for their kids. As I said before, we are all homemakers. We're not just limited by our gender. Women may be the one who spend more time at home, or maybe they're not. They may be the one who take over certain domestic responsibilities. But women, I would argue this, and this kind of goes against, you know, common mainstream Christian women culture, but women are not the primary homemakers. I think whether you work full-time in the home or out of the home, homemaking is going to be a partnership that must occur between the people who are in charge of that household. And again, the idea is that you're subduing your domain and you're cultivating it into a place that makes much fruit for God. So I think if you're single and you live alone, you could be a homemaker that produces fruit for God using your home or where you live. If you're married, you're working together with your spouse to produce fruit. If you're an empty nester, you're working together again, probably with your spouse, or if you live alone by yourself, to produce fruit, to bless others and glorify God. No matter what your situation is, you're uniquely suited to use your current situation to serve others in your household and to glorify God in the process. So for someone who's single, this could look like connecting with coworkers at your house after work and creating a space for lonely people to meet. If you're married and you're in the thick of raising littles and figuring out family, that may mean inviting others into your home to give godly examples to your kids. If you're an empty nester, it may mean seeing those lonely singles and those frazzled parents that we just talked about and using your home as a place where they can find rest for their souls. We are all homemakers. We all need to be homemakers. The world needs more homes that provide peace and rest and connection, and we could be the people that give that very thing to others. So the question is now, what type of home are you making? In Desperate, the book I mentioned before, Sally Clarkson communicates her own vision for home. She says this, I'm going to read it to you, and it's a little bit of a longer passage, but it's so beautiful. It says, in this culture of quick satisfaction and gratification, many of us have never been taught to believe one of the greatest losses of this century is the lost imagination for what the home can be if shaped by the creative hand of God's Spirit. I think that is such a beautiful picture of the power of home, of the place that we can be, that our home can be, if we set our hearts to it. I've been thinking a lot about what this podcast is about and what I'm trying to do with what I'm writing and what I'm saying. And as I think about all of this and how we can truly create a more beautiful life, I think at the heart of it is this idea that we're creating a life that we love, that will impact others for God's kingdom. And I think Sally Clarkson has a way of putting this. It's by figuring out our family puzzle, the way that we can fulfill God's purposes for us and the circumstances we are given, we can show others the beauty and deep joy that comes from serving God with our lives. I think in a shallow and anxious world, this kind of life is strikingly different and amazingly attractive to the people in the world. When we fit our heart to agree with God's heart, our desires more fully align with His world. And sometimes we will have suffering, we will have situations that we don't like, but we can overcome it because of the joy set before us. I think part of what we have to do whenever we're setting a vision for home is we have to understand, one, the impact that we have. Like she said, the souls of our children will last for all of eternity. But again, I think our homes, they're more, our children obviously are important, But it's more than just our kids. It's everybody who's in our household. And so the souls of all these people that you're pouring into, they will last for eternity. And so I think, again, if we believe scripture to be true, the way that we shepherd these people, the way that we're directing them to God, it's going to last for all of eternity. It's going to have repercussions that are going to exceed our lives far beyond here on earth. And so I think what we have to do is we have to figure out what type of place you would like to create. Sally Clarkson, she talks about this, and again, a lot of it is framed from her her life experience of homeschooling her kids and educating them at home, and she has a ministry where she invited a lot of women into her home and trained them and taught them. But I think what you can do is you can think about the types of values you would have for your home. And again, this is a perfect picture. You know, if I go and I say, okay, this is what I want for my home. I want to do this thing. So maybe I would say, you know, I like sports now, but whenever I first got married, I could care less about sports. It was just not my thing. I didn't care about football. So what if I had gone to my husband and been like, all right, I know you love football, but that's not in my family values. That's not what I want my kids to love. So you can't have that anymore. If I did that, then what I'm doing is I'm kind of, I don't know, I feel like I'm just kind of bulldozing the other person. And if I never have this conversation with them. And I think this is why it's important to understand, like, yes, women may have domestic responsibilities, but just like we've talked about, homemaking is so much more than folding the laundry or doing the meal planning. Homemaking is creating this vision for home where through your home, through the atmosphere of your home, you are directing people to God. And so this is something that every person who lives in your home can have an impact and have a say in how you're going to do this. But I think this is something where you have to set the vision. And honestly, I would say this would be a point where really, you know, I think if you're married and or if you are, you know, the head of the household, you should be the one who is setting the vision if you're a guy. And so really, you are the primary homemaker in the fact that you are setting up how you want your home to be made. And so you need to set the vision. What are you all about? And I think this is where that idea of a family puzzle is good and beautiful and right. Everybody is going to be different. Some people, you may need to have two-income households. Both people are working outside the home. And so both people working outside the home, there's going to be consequences of that where, you know, your kids are getting poured into by other people. And so you might have to do some more corrective things at home. If you have one person stay home in the relationship, you know, there's financial consequences with that. There's always consequences and things that happen from the decisions that you make. But I think it's important to be intentional about the type of vision that you create for your home. Some of the things that you could say is we're going to be a culture that values books and stories and things that are good and beautiful to pass on to our kids so that they're filling themselves up with these stories. We've talked a lot about technology on this. It could be that, you know, in our house, we do not have our phones out at the table. They're away. We don't let our kids have our phones all the time at home so that they can build the connections in person, face to face. Because just having a phone out can change a whole dynamic of a conversation. It could be that maybe you want to make sure that your kids feel loved and valued through feasting at the table. And so you want to make sure that good meals at the dinner table every night is something that's important. You know, they've said that one of the biggest things that's an indicator for success is having a meal at home every night at the dinner table. That is one of the correlations to being a Rhodes Scholar, is having a meal at the dinner table. There's so many other things that you could say, you know, the types of music that you want to listen to. I used to love music. And one of the things that I noticed is I was listening to so many podcasts, or I was just, you know, thinking, and I would get stressed out, but I never had music on in the background. And it was something that I used to do so much whenever I was growing up that brought me so much joy, but it was something that I had just gotten out of the habit of doing. That's a habit that can be life-giving to your family, and that's something that the songs and things that you're playing in the background, it's going to be something that your kids remember for the rest of their life. I still remember some of the songs that we used to run around singing, you know, whenever you would turn it on right before you do the cleaning. I still remember those songs, even though they were really weird ones that we used to sing as kids. And so I think this is something that you get the options of what you want your kids to know and love and value. But just know that the things that you have in your house that you're listening to, that you are displaying for them, that is what they are storing up. And that is going to be what comes out of their souls. And so again, it's not just for your kids. If you live alone, you need to think about this for yourself. So, you know, I think for your kids, sometimes we actually, you know, I used to watch whatever, you know, some shows that I probably shouldn't say on here, but you would fill yourself up with all these things. And then I would be thinking about this, even if I wasn't saying it. But it was just something that I was filling myself up with, basically filth, because I wasn't worried about myself. I thought, I can help handle this. But as soon as my son was born, I realized, yeah, you know, he really doesn't need to be hearing this, as soon as he started to talk and started to listen. And so I changed what I was doing. So I think sometimes if you're single, or if you know, you don't have kids around, you're not as concerned with what you're putting in your mind, but it's, I think, just as important that you make sure that what you are putting in your heart and putting in your soul is something that is good and valuable. There's also, you know, I think this is something that's really common in homeschooling circles, but also you can think about what you display on your walls. If you have Bible verses or pictures of great art or places that you love, pictures of your family that show this, you know, whether it's your friends or your church family, that show who you are and what you are about. These are things that can remind you and remind your household of who you are and what you are about. So as you think about this, again, you are creating, you are subduing your home, and you are making your home something fruitful, something that's going to have an impact for eternity because of the ministry that comes out of your home. Our home is a place of refuge. It's a place of comfort. It's a place where we can inspire our children and all those that we invite to pursue God more fully. And truly, 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 what could be a more beautiful calling for our life than that? Over the next few weeks, what we're going to be doing is discussing some rhythms and routines to create a home that inspires, provides comfort, and develops into a place of peace for you and your family. So I hope you'll join me next week for the episode. If you've enjoyed what we've been talking about, you can check the show notes for the links to my blog and all the resources mentioned. Please also, if you wouldn't mind, it's just going to be such a help to do this, please leave a 5-star rating and review for the podcast to help our community grow. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and the blog so that you never miss any of the great things that are happening. Now, I hope you go and build a more beautiful life. Thanks so much for joining me at the More Beautiful Life Collective podcast. I'm Casey Fletcher, and I hope I'll see you next week.